vienen de acá. Hombres, niños y mujeres, el esfuerzo siempre haremos.
Good night to everyone. Compañeros, compañeras, this is Radio Zapatista, Chiapas No Se Olvida, transmitting one again from New College here in San Francisco, in the center of the mission where we struggle at the bottom and the left. We would like to invite all of those who are roaming around through the mission to come onto our studio and support our programming. I am your host, Patricia, and tonight we have the special participation of two of our new members. They are the compañeras Heidi and Mayra, who will be addressing the immigration reform that has been on a major headlines for the past couple of weeks, while I inform you about the situation with Radio Regeneración, an alternative media collective located in the Autonomous University of Mexico. But before we go on, we want to thank Pedro and the Ones and Twos. Topics that we always like to keep in mind, because it's a critical part of any movement, is that of the alternative media. Because even when we look at how the Zapatistas and see how they have been able to manipulate the mainstream media from time to time for their advantage, we need to recognize that only through the alternative media can we hear the true voice of the people. In Mexico, with the other campaign, a massive network of alternative media has been formed and has a bigger threat to those in power than it did before. Part of posing that threat of educating the common person comes oppression from those in power. As an example, we want to share with you the current problem that our compañeros at Regeneración Radio are confronting in Mexico City with the struggle of the free speech, student rights, and autonomy. In 1999, Radio Pacheco, now known as Regeneración Radio, was established by students in the Humanity and Science College in Vallejo. Prior to the student strike, that denounced the fees that were trying to be implemented in Mexico's National Autonomous University, known as La UNAM. Their purpose was to give students the voice when speaking against the privatization of their educational institution. Since their foundation, they have been attacked various times to the extent where all their equipment has been destroyed by opposing groups that are paid off by the university itself. Now they are facing a bigger threat from the administration. On May 23rd of this year, the authorities of the CCH Vallejo published a referendum with the objective that students voice their desire to remove these so-called activities that just make noises. 52% of the votes were pro the displacement of the collective, but they did not take into consideration that only 3,751 students voted out of the 11,295 students enrolled. Yet they took these numbers as representatives of the whole student body. Behind all this also lay the fact that professors were offering extra credit points for those students who voted against the Regeneración Radio, making another corrupt process like those already being practiced in the governmental institutions. The Generación Radio is denouncing the fact that the referendum was not developed by both parties and excluded them from any participation of this process, making such referendum undemocratic. Other facts that made such trajectory anti-democratic was that no student body was involved in the creation of the referendum or in the execution of voting, and the worst of all, which was the buy and sell of grades by professors following the typical style of the conservative political party in Mexico, El PRI. We are able to speak with the collective member last week, who spoke about this issue and who reiterated how this radio was a way to give a voice to those who are never heard. They followed the other campaign throughout Mexico and continue to voice the people's opinion. They see their struggle as a parallel struggle to that of the Zapatistas, because like them, they continue to fight to preserve their autonomous space within an institution which simply calls itself autonomous. And they are also part of the struggle of voicing the world, the word, la palabra, all of those who are ignored, oppressed, and forgotten by the bigger society. In solidarity, Regeneración Radio has been supported by other alternative media adherents to the Sixth Declaration and continue to ask those that are part of the other campaign to keep update with what is happening to them because of the front of Laura Lucia Muñoz Corona, the director of the CCH, has a similar malicious syndrome to Felipe Calderón and Ulises Ruiz that already has expelled 15 students from three collectives, and many others have been attacked physically by opposing groups. Therefore, we ask to please visit their website by going to www.regeneracionradio.org and support the compañeros and keep the alternative media alive.
December 2005, the House of Representatives passed a bill that called for mass deportations and making it a felony to assist undocumented immigrants. This bill led to mobilization of millions who took the streets last year, calling for just immigration reform. As anti-immigrant sentiments grew, the media became filled with messages of illegal immigration as a threat to national security, labor, and American culture. The right called for a reform that would punish illegal immigration, increase enforcement at the border and within the United States, and make it difficult for those who enter the U.S. illegally to ever be able to legalize their status. But for millions who live in the growing repression of the recent immigration raids, just immigration reform would mean a real plan for legalization, a speedier process for family reunification, the protection of civil and labor rights regardless of immigration status, and an end to the deportations and increased militarization at the border. On May 17th of this year, another immigration reform bill was announced, a so-called compromise that promised to increase border security and opportunities for legalization to a large number of undocumented immigrants. In reality, this immigration reform sought to militarize the border, criminalize immigrant communities, reduce family-based immigration, and set up a system that would make it more difficult for people to obtain permanent legal residency. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the reform bill, it includes the following: sanctions to thousands of dollars for employers who hire people not authorized to work in the U.S., changes to the current family-based visa program that eliminate the ability of citizens and legal residents to petition for their adult siblings and children and make it harder to obtain visas for parents, a point system that would prioritize granting visas to people with higher educational levels, technology and engineering skills, the ability to speak English, undermining the of due process rights, including provisions to allow for indefinite detention of immigrants and making legalization almost impossible for people with past gang affiliation, the construction of new fencing at the border and new detention facilities in order to hold 27,500 people per day, and increasing the personnel of Customs and Border Patrol. The Z visa program, which would grant conditional status and later allow people to apply for legal permanent residency. The process would last at least 8 years, cost applicants thousands of dollars, and require them to leave the country and then judge them based on the point system. And finally, a guest worker program that would allow people to enter the country as temporary workers for 3 2-year periods with a mandatory 1-year leave from the country and no way to petition for legal permanent residency to ensure that they don't stay. Joining us in the studio tonight is Evelyn Sanchez from the Bay Area Immigrant Rights Coalition. Welcome, Evelyn.
Thank you very much for having me here.
Evelyn, can you tell us a little bit about what this immigration reform bill would, how it would potentially impact immigrant communities?
Yeah, and actually going off the notes that you actually just said, Bay Area Immigrant Rights Coalition was one of the only immigrant rights organizations in the nation that actually called for the death of this bill. Our exact words when we went to go visit Senator Feinstein's office was to bury this bill. And the reason why we went to her is because she was one of the architects of this bill. So she was part of that insider group that met behind closed doors, which is a very undemocratic way of going about things and not usually the legislative process. And we asked her, bury this thing, and bury it for many of the reasons that you just outlined. I'd like to say, first of all, that actually anti-immigrant sentiment in the United States has been with us for, unfortunately, almost throughout the founding of this country. One of the very first laws that this nation passed when it became an independent nation was the Alien and Sedition Act of 1797, which excluded all people from France specifically because they thought that they were bad seeds, that they were going to come and spread revolutionary thought. And since then, even before then, as soon as the people that then founded this country, they started annihilating the people that were indigenous to this continent. And since then, we've seen policies such as the Chinese Exclusionary Act. We've seen Japanese Americans interned in camps, the institution of slavery. I mean, it really goes on and on and on. So really what we're seeing today, this sentiment of wanting to criminalize people of color, specifically, I'm talking people of color, of wanting to ensure that they never become members of our society, to basically blame them as not educated or in some way inferior because they are unable to assimilate, to speak English or whatnot, is really part of a much, much, much longer history in the United States than many people care to remember. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can't forget that the civil rights movement was just 40 years ago. That's not so long ago. Many people actually lived through that. So this Senate proposal was absolutely despicable. And in our analysis, it would have really been catastrophic for the immigrant community. And I appreciate what you were saying about alternative media on your report of Radio Regeneración, because really I think that the media, mainstream media in this country, has done a lot to confuse the community by saying that this Senate compromise proposal was offering legalization. When immigrants ask for legalization, they're asking for something very specific. They're asking for green cards. They're asking for legal permanent residency. And what this Senate proposal was offering was conditional status based upon their ability to work, much like workhorses. The minute they stopped working, that was it. There was no reason to keep them here, so they would have lost their ability to keep that visa valid. And it wasn't until members of the community were able to understand the requirements of the Z visa, the eligibility requirements of the Z visa, and the requirements enabled to maintain the Z visa, as well as the cost, and how long and what other additional requirements and hurdles they would have to jump over to enable to access legal permanent residency, that directly to me, community members in Stockton, in Oakland, in San Francisco said, we'd rather stay as we are than have this Senate proposal. This Senate proposal is absolutely, it's impossible. They literally believe that the point system that you just mentioned was structured intentionally against them to ensure that they would never become full members of this society. And when the immigrant community asks for legalization, they are asking for legal permanent residency at a minimum. At a minimum. And beyond that, they eventually definitely want to become citizens. And this Senate proposal was not offering that at all.
Thank you, Evelyn. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Evelyn tonight to talk about immigration.
You're listening to Radio Zapatista, Chiapas No Se Olvida. We're here talking about immigration issues with Evelyn Sanchez. And just a couple more questions to find out where this is going.
Evelyn, thanks for joining us today. One of the most important features of this bill was the point system. Can you tell us specifically how that affected our communities of color and specifically women who will not get as many points because they don't do technical types of jobs?
Absolutely. So this Senate proposal was really revolutionary in a negative way, in the fact that it sought to change the foundation of our current immigration system. Since 1965, our immigration system here in the United States has been based upon family-based immigration. So if somebody comes to the United States, they can petition for their spouses, their children, their adult children, their siblings, their parents, etc. So what this bill sought to do is completely change that and eliminate it. And what they wanted to do was to ensure that all future flows of immigration would be people that would speak English proficiently, would have the, quote, desirable labor skills, specifically in computer and technology and computer technology engineering fields, etc. So the point system was one in which you had to garner, you had to accumulate a certain number of points in order to be able to be eligible for a visa. And the way you accumulate these points is, how well do you speak English? What sort of university education do you have? What sort of income level do you have? Are you somebody that's going to have to come here and depend on social services, or can you support yourself fairly well? What sort of labor skills do you have? And definitely, in terms of our community, and I'm speaking the Latino community, we know, and this is something that I really have to say, in all my conversations with the community, it's so touching to hear how proud people are to hear of the work that they do. It's simple work. It's sometimes low-skilled work. But they're so proud of it because they know that even though it's usually the back of the restaurant work, it's the house cleaning work, it's the construction work, it's the hotel room cleaning work, it's the, you know, the agricultural work that they do, it's important.
And necessary.
And they so feel that it is the necessary work to keep this country going. And they're so proud of it. So when I told them, when I would tell them, yeah, you know, the Z visa says basically, if you want it, if you can get it, if you can pay for it, you know, as long as you can work, you're good. If you can't work, the day you get sick, the day a woman gets pregnant, the day you have an accident on the job and you can't work, that's it. Ciao. Te regresas a tu país. And it was so touching to hear them say, you know, I remember one man in Stockton, he told me, you know, that really makes me feel like a donkey. It makes me feel like I'm as good as long as I'm useful. And when I'm not useful anymore, that's it for me. You know, usually, you know, you shoot a donkey when it can't work anymore. And that's what he felt like. And it occurred to me, that's really how we're treating the immigrant community. In terms of women specifically, we know that most women that come to the United States come to specifically do domestic work. They are the ones that take care of the children in the United States. They are the ones that take care of the elderly in the United States. They are the ones that maintain and keep order in a lot of households in the United States. But those don't fall under the, quote, desirable labor skills that this point system would have awarded. So they definitely would have suffered. And the other thing that I would like to point out is, even in order to be eligible for this Z visa, you would have had to prove that you were formerly employed. a fact that a lot of these domestic workers can't do. They're not given check stubs. They don't have W-2 forms. They never filled out an application. It's very under the table, informal type of arrangements. And there's very, it's very unlikely that they would have documentation to prove that they were actually working, but they do work. So to the ability that they would have even been able to prove that they were workers is very questionable.
Okay. Well, thank you, Evelyn, for being here. Can you tell people how to contact you if they have any further questions?
Absolutely. 510-839-7598. That is the office to the Bay Area Immigrant Rights Coalition. And before I sign off, I'd like to say just one thing. This fight is far from over. And I think that something very interesting that one of my colleagues said today, because we were on a conference call with several groups today thinking, what are we going to do now that everything tanked? Some organizations want to continue to push comprehensive immigration reform in 2007. Personally, I feel that's not going to work. Unfortunately, we are dealing with a Congress that is very anti-immigrant, that is very xenophobic, that is very racist, and it's impossible to have it produce something that's positive. But this colleague of mine said, we got the proposal that we deserved. And that really points to the fact that we have a lot of work to do when it comes to mobilizing our community in the political process of this country. It's sad, but it's true. The anti-immigrant group did a lot more work in terms of killing this bill than the pro-immigrant group. So I really want to encourage people and to highlight the importance of voting and of participating civically in this process and this debate, which is going to continue, and I know we will win.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evelyn. You're listening to Radio Zapatista.
This was our time. This was Radio Zapatista. I'm Patricia.
Heidi.
And Mayra.
Have a good night to all. Drive you insane.